Hey, friends. Thanks for listening to the Axiom podcast. We're a community centered around experiencing Jesus together and practicing his ways as a community. We like to say in Peoria as it is in heaven. So this podcast is just space for discussion and exploring ideas and principles of the kingdom, and also where we post our sermons from Sunday gatherings. So please engage us online, and hope you enjoy this episode.
Good to have you here with us. I'm Gavin. I'm the pastor here at Axiom. And whether you're live at home or here in the room, I just want to remind you that we're family. And that is at the top of our identity, is that we are family together under the Lordship of Jesus. And we see even new folks who enter through the door as participants in the family. And we treat each other that way with love and respect. So I hope you sense that this morning from one another. I want to highlight a couple of things before I get into the sermon. Yesterday, we had a Love Peoria Day here at Axiom, where we just invited the church to engage in acts of service and love here in the neighborhood, visibly outside these doors, because at the end of the day, we are not who we are in here, but who we are out there is truly a witness and testimony of who we are. And it was beautiful. What transpired was some really incredible moments and shared experiences with folks in the neighborhood, as well as with each other. And it was just this awesome harmony of being able to gift and serve and come alongside it, but also for us to say and realize and confess that we are the ones who are being gifted right now. We are the ones who are experiencing love from this community, and to partake in the practices of getting out into the road and into the streets and into the neighborhood as a rhythm is something that I think collectively we sense that there's a need for. So we had an opportunity to go into the community garden and plant some stuff. We had an opportunity to go around and pick up trash. And we also got to go around and deliver roses to every family here in the neighborhood just out front as a symbolic gesture that it's okay and that you're loved and that today, regardless of what happens in the world, like love transcends this. And it was good. And so I just celebrate, this is just me confessing my celebration of our opportunity to love on Peoria. And we're going to do more of this, and there'll be more opportunities. So thank you again to those that were able to be there. What a cool day it was. Also, I want to make you guys aware, just some like house cleaning stuff. We, since March, since COVID hit, we took, like any community did, We've lost participation in our services, giving, or we went from 36 volunteers in our kids area to five volunteers in our kids area. And yet, here we are, still here, and in a unique form, but we're still here together, whether at home or in person in some way. But I say all this to say we still have responsibilities that we have to care for and tend to. And so I want to make you guys aware that we had funds aside to help us get through this season, and we have made it so far. But today I stand before you, and we are a week or two away from running out of those funds. And I want you guys to know that as part of our church family, that you need to be aware of that reality. And we're prepared to take cuts and to do what we need to do. This Axiom Church isn't going anywhere, but I want to offer that to the body and to you guys so that you know that you can participate and to give regularly and to keep that as a consistent part of your discipline here as part of the family. So I just want to encourage that to help care for the needs that we have here as a church body. So you're aware of that. We'll speak a little bit more to that next month as we see where things kind of land with that, but I wanted to let you guys know in advance. Cool? Cool. Well, not cool though, right? But you know. All right. And then I want to also make you aware is on the 18th, we're doing a pie night. Every year we usually do a Old Town Peoria Thanksgiving feast. And we invite the whole neighborhood out. We have a huge meal and we get a ton of people in here. Last year, I think we had like 400 people eating food inside of this room, which is just insane. But we thought maybe that wouldn't be like the best idea this time around. And so So what we want to do instead is we still want to say yes to the opportunity to engage our neighbors. We still want to say yes to the opportunity to celebrate them and give thanks together. And so what better way to do that than to just like give out free pie, you know? And so we're going to have a pie night on the 18th, that Wednesday, from 5 to 7. And there's pies for you guys to take home. There's pies for the community to take home. And we'll have some refreshments and music. But the hope is we just come and we'll be outside and we'll do some socializing fellowship and just engage with the neighborhood. So make it a part of your holiday plans and invite friends and family to come join us and grab a fruit pie. It'll be catered in for that event. Okay? So what day is that on? The 18th, 5 to 7. All right. Awesome. Look forward to seeing you. Okay, cool. Changing gears. The prophetic witness. This last week, we got to step into this series, and my hope was to shake the boat a little bit. I wanted to step us out of sort of our typical stereotypes, if you will, of what we think of when we think of the prophetic or the prophets, okay? And often we're sort of compelled to think of it in two ways dominantly, okay? And there's other ways, but two ways dominantly that I see that people engage in the story of the prophets is through celebrating their activism and seeing them in the heroic movements of social justice. We see the language of the prophetic sort of leaning in that direction in our current modern world, but also in history's past. But also we see the prophetic in vision and what's coming and what's before us. And so in both of those categories, I wanted to challenge us to rethink and say, is there a chance that there's space for both of these things, that it is not exclusively one or the other? And can we possibly untie ourselves from a sort of Hollywood picture of what prophetic is? And could we imagine through the prophets together and reconsider what it means to be a prophetic witness as the church? Because at the end of the day, we're a part of the tradition of the prophetic witness of the church. And it's important for us that we carry this out in such a way that is not just biblical, but Jesus. And so as we look at the Old Testament, I want to remind you that we look into the scriptures through the lens of Christ, that Jesus is the one whom all the scriptures point to, and through Jesus and his authority, he himself illuminates and points back to the scriptures through his Spirit. And so we have a Christocentric view of how we understand even the prophets. And that's why we can say with great confidence that the prophetic is not just activists and it is not just fortune tellers, but that the prophetic is one who is equally engaged in the work of dismantling the oppression of the age and the spirit of the age as much as it is engaged in inviting us into a vision of what can be if we're willing to say yes. Jesus puts both of those on display and in harmony together. And I hope that we can see that today as we continue. Last week we looked at Moses. And Moses, of course, takes his people who are oppressed by in Egypt, and they're under the care of Pharaoh, and they're being oppressed and enslaved. And he goes and he confronts the systems that be, but God confronts it through the plagues. But more than that, he invites Israel into a vision of liberty. He invites them into a vision of freedom. He stirs in them the imagination necessary to begin to think there are possibilities beyond the cages of Egyptian regime. And we too, as followers of Jesus, must begin to imagine together and to dream dreams that are possible of seeing ourselves and our witness in the vision of the kingdom of God beyond the regime of whatever oppression we find ourselves in. And most of us, this starts in the interior, but it must also make its way into the social. If we were to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, body, soul, and strength, and your neighbor, it goes into everything. And so we have to begin by saying, what is it that is trapped within inside me? What is the identity that I've enslaved myself to? What is the space that I've sort of marked for myself? And is it possible that God is taking me beyond that boundary? And as he does that, is it possible that at the same time he's doing it in the person next to you and then the person next to them? And collectively, as the body of Christ, may we be stirred into the life of the kingdom through the prophetic witness, ultimately, of Jesus, who paints a picture of what life today can actually be like. That's the amazement of Jesus. The reason the church 2,000 years later is still going strong is because this man, Jesus, who is more than man, came into the world and lived in such a way that was possible for each of you to live in. And we are appropriately provoked and inspired by him. This is what the prophets ultimately are doing. They're liberating us to live as God created us to live in a world that is foreign to the way that God has invited and created order in. One of the biggest challenges, and therefore one of the biggest needs we have for the prophetic, is to pull us out of not the cages of the empire, but the despair that their narrative puts on us. And the despair that our own narratives begin to sow into our hearts and minds. How many of us know someone, or even know within our own areas of our lives, just this narrative of hopelessness, that no matter what I do, I'll never get better, or no matter how hard I try, there's no end to this, or I'll never be free from this illness, or I'll never, whatever it is, or it's always going to be this way, it's always been that way, it's never going to be anything different, and it's this killjoy, it's kill the dream, right? Anybody know personalities like that? Anyone ever find themselves stuck in that? Yeah, thank you. We ourselves are in a place where we don't know how to move on from the thing that continues to haunt us. How many of us are haunted by past moments? Or how many of us can't bear to think about what was before the thing happened, whatever the thing is. We can't bear to envision what it would look like being freed from this, because that would cause too much pain for us to think about what could be. You know what I'm saying? Because we get to a place where we're so convinced that the only world we can live in is the world of despair and hopelessness, that to dream beyond it is an exercise in teasing yourself. It's an exercise in dangling the donut in front of you that you can never have. But the prophetic comes and they look at Israel and their enslavement and their exile in all the various forms, whether it's Babylon or Syrian or Persian or Egyptian, whatever it was, or in civil war with the North and the South, whatever it was. And he says, no, this is not your narrative. This is not your story. The prophetic reminds Israel that the dreams they're dreaming are really nightmares, and that they should be dreaming a dream that is equivalent to the promises that God has given them from the beginning. But you'll never live in it until you dare to imagine it. This is the story of the prophets, of how they work, how they do it. If you've ever heard of the dirty war in Argentina in the 1970s, there was really enslavement. This regime took over, and they put imprisoned thousands and thousands of people that were leftist or socialist, and they would just kill them left and right, their records would be wiped clean. The government had just gone south, and it was so dark and so painful for half of this nation that they were hunted and afraid for their lives, and they didn't know how to get out of the spell of, what if it's going to be me? And we find later, and this is where I'm finding this, that there's stories of people who were in prison for years, and what they did was they began to dream dreams of what it looked like to be free. They began to think about collectively of what it would mean to walk out of this. And they connected something really important, that their reality that they were experiencing in enslavement was just the imagination of their oppressor being worked out. And so what if our imagination could be stronger than our oppressors, and we could begin to dream of something greater than this enslavement? What if we began to dream of holes appearing in the wall and walking out? What if we could begin to dream of families being reunited with their lost children? What if we could begin to dream, and they would have these vivid, bizarre dreams of potential freedom? And eventually, they find themselves stirred in such a way that there, that collectively justice begins to take place in their land. And the story begins to shift, and the narrative begins to change. And the dying dream of the oppressor, which can't see past its current moment, it's already succeeded, it has the power, it has no vision to give except to hold on to what is. But those at the bottom could dream of all sorts of things that could be. And there's power in that. And so the prophetic witness is the articulation of what reality can be if only we can allow ourselves to imagine it. This is what we read in the Old Testament over and over and over. It is to know that in our imagination and our reality are not two separate things, but that all of our realities of despair and hopelessness are also, they also too are the products of our imagination. So let's begin to dream different dreams. Enter Isaiah. Isaiah is a wonderful example of this, and I'll be showing you a number of spaces where he does this. But just if I could harp on Isaiah for a minute. First of all, he's the first prophet. He's right after Song of Solomon. You'll see him there, and he's got like he's got 66 chapters. It's a lot. Okay, anybody read straight through Isaiah ever? Just curious. It's okay. I haven't. It would be awful. The first 39 chapters of Isaiah is just basically, okay, this is a crude summary, so please forgive me, but basically Isaiah is just ranting about the injustice and the wickedness and the grossness and the disparagingness of Israel, like Judah, and it's like, he's just kind of like, ugh, you know? And he keeps going. But the truth is that he eventually turns the page. But what we need to see before we turn the page is that Isaiah is willing to go to the space where the imagination is dead. He's willing to call it what it is. And what he does beautifully, and this is what really resembles Jesus here, is that he just becomes a mirror. He becomes a mirror of Israel's own story. He just reveals to them what already is. And that's the truth about every apocalyptic moment, is that it always brings out the worst in people. And you see it. Just as we do. And Isaiah just mirrors it back. And this, of course, gets wrapped into how we view Scripture in general, right? We see this throughout the Old Testament. The Old Testament is not just revealing who God is. It's revealing who we think God is or how we think reality is without God. And most folks never begin to put that piece together. But it's there over and over and over again. A view of God that is insufficient. And if it was sufficient, why did Jesus come? Why were the prophets there? Because it wasn't good enough. They needed to point us to something much greater and much bigger and invite us out of our despair and into the space of hope. Isaiah disrupts the status quo of the despair and evokes new vision. He takes the scattered and the divided, the captive and the oppressed, the weak and the not strong, and he reminds them first that God is still God. He is as consistent as he has ever been. Isaiah 55, if you want to turn there, verse 1 through 3 is a great place to just get a picture of this. And again, there's like so many books here, I can't get to it all, but come, everyone who is thirsty. It's just mad. Put yourself, you're in the despairedness, you're in the grossness, you're in the realism of your depression. And Isaiah comes along, come, everyone who is thirsty, come to the waters, and you without money, come, buy and eat. Again, is this a tease? Or is he planting a seed of hope for something that can be? Come, buy wine and milk. They've gone without these things, without money and without cost. Why do you spend money on what is not food and your wages on what does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good. This is a message for today. And you will enjoy the choicest of foods. Pay attention and come to me. Listen so that you will live. I will make an everlasting covenant with you. The promises assured to David Now, you need to like hold on to that. We need to hold on to that, this invitation into the sacred, out of the desperation, out of hell. Come eat. Come partake in what is good. It is not gone. It has not left you. It is still here. But what's changed is your imagination. What's changed is that you've fallen into the trap of being despair. And he invites you out. Come on out. Eat. Celebrate. Purchase what you think you can't have. Because you can. Israel is invited to hope in God's promises, and he ends it there in that passage. He points them, he says, he reminds them, it's not just a point to what will be, it's also at the same time simultaneously pointing back to what was declared already. This is what makes me nervous sometimes in the church today, is I hear people say things, I'm like, wait a second, have you forgotten that there is no death? There is no endless hope, or there's no non-hope for you. There is so much hope. But again, today in our world, we hear all these messages that fall short of the promises of God. So which one are we living in? Which one is our faith acting in? Despite Israel's misfortune, despite their unfaithfulness to God, despite their wickedness, Isaiah invites Israel into a vision of hope because God's promises are his promises. And here's the key. Your very ability to hope is a confession in itself to the shortcomings of our ways and to the limitations of our best efforts. What I mean by that is that the second you begin to hope, you're saying no to the very thing that you've been saying yes to for way too long. The very moment you begin to dream with God of the possibilities that he created you for, you're saying yes to the thing that always actually was and is, but we haven't allowed to be. We must dare to hope. And in doing so, we protest the cycle of our own rebellion. And we protest the enslavement of our own sin. We protest the illusion that God's promises have passed. We say no to that. It is hope that through the prophetic witness that enables the rejection of our despair. It enables the outcome of us meeting with God and the very thing that he has told us he will meet us in. It is hope in the acknowledgement of who God is. And in doing so, we make way for what God can do. The participation. Isaiah 46:3-4. Listen to me, house of Jacob, all the remnant of the house of Israel, who have been sustained from the womb, carried along since birth. I will be the same until your old age, and I will bear you up when you turn gray. How beautiful is this, by the way? I have made you, and I will carry you. I will bear and save you. Oh, man. This is the love of God being just spoken over his people. Will you allow yourself to be loved by him? Will you allow yourself to have hope? Isaiah 42:9-12. Just let the scripture speak for itself. The past events have indeed happened. Cool. Now I declare to you new events. Imagine that. I announce them to you before they even occur. Sing, listen to this, sing a new song to the Lord. Sing his praise from the ends of the earth. You who go down to the sea with all that fills it. The people of the most despair, you who are the most hopeless, sing a new song. You islands with your inhabitants, let the desert and its cities shout. The settlements where Kedar dwells cry aloud. Let the inhabitants of Selah sing for joy. Let them cry out from the mountaintops. Let them give glory to the Lord and declare his praise in the islands. Like sing a new song. I'm going to read one more. It's not even going to come up. I just can't help it. Isaiah 43, verse 18, do not remember the former things or consider the things of the old, because I'm about to do a new thing. Now it springs forth. Can you perceive it? Don't tell me God isn't speaking. Don't tell me God isn't provoking and inspiring the dream within you to be intimately connected with him. You are invited to the feast of hope. Despite your misfortunes or despite your unfaithfulness, you are invited. In Matthew 26, Jesus does this very thing. He invites us to hope and through communion. And I want to do this together now. As they were eating, Jesus took bread, blessed and broke it, and he gave it to the disciples. Take and eat it. This is my body. Then he took a cup, and giving thanks, he gave it to them and said, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood that establishes the covenant. It is shed for many for the forgiveness of sins. But hear this. But I tell you, from this moment, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine. Here it is. Until that day when I drink it in a new way. In my Father's kingdom with you. Jesus dares to sit before his disciples in the most despairing moment of their journey, the moment before Jesus is put on the cross and crucified, and he says, until this day. You see, Jesus, the prophet, knows that a new day is coming and that hope might even be had here in this crucible. Even in his own death, he already sees resurrection. Might we begin to see it too? So Jesus, as we take this bread and we take this cup, which represents your body and your blood, we partake together in the hope of communion, of your body. We confess that you have been broken so that we might be restored, and that your blood has been poured out so that we might be forgiven. Oh Christ, we have hope today because of you. So invite us together to take the bread. Go ahead, you can eat it. And as you eat your bread, I want you to take a minute and imagine, dream a little bit, meet with God in your place of despair. Let him paint a new picture, one that's wildly out of your imagination. Let him show you what is new. Let him help you sing a new song. And when you're ready, together, take the juice and drink it. And as you drink the juice, imagine your misfortune, imagine your unfaithfulness being washed away, the chain being broken. And may the new song now begin.